Mr. Holland.
You're late. And you left your clarinet here the other day.
Yeah, if you know anyone who wants it, well, I'm giving up the clarinet. I'm just goofing everybody else up anyway. So, I just wanted to say thanks. Thanks for trying.
Is it any fun?
I wanted it to be.
You know what we've been doing wrong, Miss Lang? We've been playing the notes on the page.
Well, what else is there to play?
Well, there's a lot more to music than notes on a page. These guys, for example. Now, they can't sing, and they have absolutely no harmonic sense, and they're playing the same three chords over and over again. And I love it. Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't stop, won't stop.
From Buffalo, New York, a pretty good spot on the Great Lakes, it's the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast.
Hi, I'm Ryan Gurnett. And I'm not sure if this thing on my lip is acne or herpes.
Hi, I'm Dennis Reed, and I really wish you'd stop kissing me.
And welcome to the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast, where we talk about the good, the bad, and the funny of being a DIY musician in the 716. Today, we have an interview with drummer Blake Cooper of Rochester's garage pop group Dumb Angel. Blake also went to school for audio engineering, so I got to talk some shop with him there. And Blake lives here in Buffalo, even though his bandmates are located in Rochester. His band is Dumb Angel, and we're going to play you a song from their 2015 album, Antenna, and the song is called Moss.
And in this episode of the Struggle is Real Buffalo Music Podcast, we're also going to learn
if a song can truly be said to have a minimalist arrangement once the theremin comes out.
Whether or not studio engineers take your isolated vocal tracks home to make their friends laugh at parties. Search your heart. You know the answer already.
I kind of wish I would have done that. We'll also learn if any of
us... Like you didn't.
I really wish I did that. That sounds fun.
It's never too late. Start a label just to do that.
Oh, excellent. All right. We're also going to learn if any of us posers really know the difference between Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich.
We'll learn how much better off we all are in the democratized age of DIY boutique labels like the one Dumb Angel is on, free at last from the tyranny of life-changing record company advances.
All right. We're also going to learn how I made a girl cry in my car. Again.
And whether or not you really need that mic on Tom, too.
Yes, you do. Absolutely. So we want your input, and we want to know what you think about the Buffalo music scene. We want to find out what makes the struggle real here in Buffalo. So we have a survey up, and we want to know what's the worst music venue in Western New York, and what's the worst trend in local music. What cover song would you be A-okay with never hearing again? We know you have opinions, and we want to hear them. So if you would go to our Facebook page.
Oh, we got links all over there.
Okay, yeah. If you go to the Facebook page, or if you check out the notes for this show, mm-hmm. You're going to find our fun 10-question survey with these and other questions. We'll give the results in a Family Feud-style segment in a future episode, and we look forward to hearing what you have to say.
Yeah, we'd really appreciate it. It's going to be super fun.
So far, the responses have been pretty awesome.
Yeah,
you're
reading them already?
Oh, that's
okay.
As soon as my email told me one came in, I'm like, let's see what they said. Let's see what
cool.
They said.
I can't wait. Yeah, a couple people online said they took it and they actually thought it was fun, like to do. So
complaining's great. It's one of my hobbies. As anyone who's checked out the Buffalo Craigslist section under the musician section will know. Craigslist is a crazy place. Craigslist is a crazy place no matter where you're looking.
Yeah.
But when you're dealing solely with musicians, and their people on Craigslist, you know you're getting something special. So, with that in mind, we're going to do a segment of Real Not Real, where I'm going to read you some Craigslist posts.
Okay.
And you're going to have to tell me if they're real or if I made them up.
Okay, so you've recently been to Craigslist, you're admitting that.
Yes, yes.
And when you were there, you found some outrageous things, you collected them, you matched them with your own inspired imaginings.
I think I did a good job.
And time will tell. And you're going to present those to me now, and I will have to suss out which is really from Crazy Craigslist and which is from Crazy Ryan.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Start the music! First one. Hey musicians, we are in need of any musicians that are interested in being a part of a neo-soul, hip-hop, jazz-fusion-inspired band. You can play the banjo, guitar, oboe, sax, whatever.
I'm going to say that is just as stupid as anything I've heard on Craigslist, and I'm going to say it's real.
Correct.
All right. Neo what?
Neo-soul, hip-hop, jazz-fusion.
Well, good luck. I'm going to go home and answer that one.
If you're an oboe player, you know, I think the oboe is the worst instrument. I hate the sound of it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I can't stand it. So if they want to just put all the oboe players in one place, then I know to stay away from it.
Maybe this is you luring oboe players in one location where you can set them on fire.
Dennis, stop. All right, next one. Pianist seeks piano tuner. Women only.
Pianist seeks a piano tuner and only a woman. So this person wants somebody to come there and tune their piano, so to speak, but it's got to be a woman.
Got to be a woman.
Do we think it was a man who posted this ad?
Oh,
possibly?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Any ad on Craigslist where they're looking specifically for a female, I figure like 95% of the time it's a dude.
And this wasn't posted in the creative gigs section or
the talent section? No, it wasn't.
Or the activity partners section. This was in the community musician.
Well, yeah. Where else would you look for a piano tuner?
Well, where else would you look for a woman to come to your house? That's what I'm thinking.
Granted, yes.
Okay, so I'm going to say that is not real.
Yes, you are correct.
All right.
All right, next one. Cockatiel babies. These sweet birds are recently weaned. All will make amazing pets and a bunch of colors to choose from.
And amazing colors to choose from?
Yeah.
Wait, cockatiel babies? So you're saying this was in the musician section?
Yes, this was in the musician section.
Okay. I'm going to say that, let's see, people are breeding animals at home. How much smarts do they have to work the internets? I'm going to say it's true.
Yes, you are correct.
All right.
Usually I would say one about every 50 posts on there don't belong there at all. And right. It's usually for pets.
Interesting.
Sort of.
Well, I think the ones that don't belong there are the show announcements. Like, you'll see sometimes people just advertising
that.
Their bands on the Craigslist community. Like, it's clearly a community. It's people seeking music. Isn't it? Am I based on that?
There was a post in there from a band from Kentucky advertising their new EP. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's especially ridiculous.
Yeah, that makes me angry. Yeah, no, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's Craigslist,
yeah.
So it's a given that 50% of it, at least, is just shit. All right, next one. We have a musician who's looking for a variety band. Her instrument is dancing.
I mean, there are some desperate-ass artists in Buffalo, and so I'm going to say that it's true.
No, it is false. Okay. I made that one up.
All right. That makes me feel a little better, actually.
I did know a woman who told me about a band she was in, and when I asked her what instrument she played, she said she danced.
Well, you know, apparently, the legend goes that Tim Booth, the lead singer from the jangle rock band James, that I really adore.
Oh, I love James.
Apparently,
James is amazing.
Yeah. Apparently, he was a dancer originally in the band, like when they first started playing. Well, he wasn't in the band, he sort of was like, he would just go all shaman, you know, around them as they performed, and somehow, I don't know what the exact progression was, but he like got with the band as a dancer, and then he became the lead singer.
The next ad, it just says, pretty good piano.
Hmm. You're telling me there's just a headline and no body description?
The headline is the same as the description. They both just say,
oh,
pretty good piano.
Okay, so they typed the same thing twice or copied and pasted. Or maybe Craigslist has like a default thing where if only one of the fields is filled in, it fills in the other one or something. Could be. I'm gonna say that is pretty likely true.
Correct.
All right.
That one is true. So if anyone's looking for pretty good piano,
you want great piano, move on.
Yes, yes. A mediocre piano, just you're out of your league. All right. A Buffalo-based producer known as Uno will auto-tune any track of your choice for just $35.
Oh, Uno. Actually, Uno was the name of a gang in North Tonawanda. Have you ever heard of
them?
Have you heard? I don't know if they were in any other places in Western New York, but apparently North Tonawanda had a gang. Yeah, I think it was like
two Polish
kids.
Guys?
No, I think it was like two kids. But yeah, they terrorized the imagination of the city for years. I see all kinds of stuff like that. Like people, you know, hustling to make a couple bucks on Craigslist. You know, people looking to master your track. So I'm going to say that that's true.
No, that is false.
Oh,
Uno is actually a rapper name that was given to me when I was in college. there was a rapper who I worked with. His name was Burma. You'll never hear this, but he was delightful. And he wanted me to produce some tracks for him, and mm-hmm. I did, and they came out kind of cool. And he's like, well, you need a producer name. He's like, I'm going to call you Uno. And I did not go by that, because that's a terrible producer name.
Is it?
I think it. I mean,
one is the loneliest number.
Look at me. Like, do I look like an Uno?
but I got to admit, like, it just sounds like it has some cred. It's but just being a one-word name too.
Okay. I later got the nickname Gambles, and I liked that way better than being Uno.
Okay,
Gambles. That was what happens when you almost get a rap group into a car accident the first time you meet them.
Oh no!
All right, next we have Stop. Just stop. You care spamming many different Craigslist sites with your crappy ass screaming that you think is singing. You are a horrible singer. No one wants you in their band. No one wants you taking up space on Craigslist.
Now, this is one of the coolest things about Craigslist, is the meta Craigslist posts, when are posting about other Craigslist posts. There was one vicious one. These folks, Slim Jim and the Can't Hardly Playboys, remember those?
When you were when you mentioned bands posting shows,
yeah, I thought
I couldn't
too.
Think of the full name of the band, but that was who I was thinking
of.
Yeah,
it was like Can't Sing, or like Slim Jim and the Can't Hardly Playboys. What effective marketing, though, we're sitting here talking about them. But anyways,
it's true.
They were on there all the time, and then somebody like took them to task so bad. Like somebody wrote this screed that was like, listen, you know, fucks, you're on here every week. Nobody cares. Nobody's going to go to your shows. This isn't the place for this. Why do you have such a warped worldview that you think that anybody coming to Craigslist would want to hear about your shitting Playboy and they can't hardly fucking get a real way to get the word out to your, I mean, it was a screed and stopped. I haven't seen, did you see any in your research for this game show?
I don't believe so.
I have not seen a single one since. So it actually, the meta, critical commentary on Craigslist can work evidently.
So,
but it was awesome. I applaud whoever wrote that is listening to this podcast. Fucking big ups.
Drop us a line. Maybe we'll have you on as a guest.
Absolutely, we will.
He, whoever it is, he understands the struggle. So, do you think that is real or not?
That's kind of caught up in my reaction. I'm gonna say it's real.
Yeah, it is absolutely
all
real.
Right.
I was super happy about that. All right, we have a guitar player in Lockport. The post provides links that are supposed to be examples of him playing guitar, but they all lead to crappy homemade karate videos.
Real or not real? Oh, I want that to be real. I'm going to say it's real.
It is not real.
Oh.
It is based off of, I had one guy who, I think he was one of the people who wanted to play guitar in our band that I dealt with. And he sent me a link to some videos, which are all like him finger tapping.
Mm-hmm.
And then, if you went to his account, it was all videos of him playing guitar and a bunch of crappy karate videos.
Oh, no kidding! That's great. I want to say that. I mean, you know, you've seen every combination of absurdity on the internet by now, probably.
Yeah.
But I want to say that there's some video out there of a guy holding a guitar and doing karate at the same time, like kicking, like breaking blocks of concrete and shit.
If you can, if I can find that. That's going up on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah.
So
by the, that's your
stay,
task.
Stay tuned. All right. So we have a country cover band looking for someone to get involved with the band, not just to be in it, but to be a part of it.
Okay, so they're trying to say what? Like, we don't want you to just be in it. We want you to, like, sort of spiritually feel like you belong, too? Is that, are they at pains to...
I feel like it would be along those lines, but they never really explain.
Now, maybe they mean, like, we want you to not only be in the band, but be a part of it, meaning helping us break all the shit down afterwards and do all the shit stuff.
Mean that, too.
Like, it could be code for that. Like, other, you know, people have just come and been a member of the band, and then, like, as soon as, like, they got paid, they split, and they didn't help them carry shit. So I'm going to say that, since I can kind of figure out maybe where that's coming from, I'm going to say it's true.
It is true.
All right.
And I never have really been the guy who just, like, left everyone else's equipment at shows for a good part of my life. I try to help when I can.
Oh, no. Really? Fuck that. I'm out of there. As soon as I can be. I've got it. Well, I know how to hover and to find the moment when you're done packing up, and then that's when I make my entrance, and I'm just like, oh, hey, I see you're down to your pedal board.
I mean, I'm a sick guy, so I can't carry much stuff to begin with, but, like, when I was able, mm-hmm. I wish I could have just been that guy who was just like, yes, I'm just, I gotta go, something came up.
out of there. Listen, I have my nights, but I'll help. Nights too, but I used to have this one guy, his name is Ryan Henderson. He was lead guitar player and middleman, and unfortunately he's no longer with us, but mm-hmm. We used to joke around, I mean, on this earth, he died tragically, but we used to joke around that he would be off the stage and, like, have his shit packed up while the last chord was still ringing out, like, on stage. And he was he was pretty much that fast with it. Like, as soon as, like, you literally, like, you know, at the end of the song, his guitar case is open. I mean, yeah, I actually have a memory of him doing that at the Tudor Lounge.
Oh, wow.
But
all right.
Please continue. With this wonderful tour of the cesspool of Craigslist.
All right, we got three left. All right, we have a guitar player from Buffalo who says, I would like to gig again before I die and my 10-year-old turns 26, and Stevie Ray is not my favorite guitar player.
You know, I understand this person. I understand this profile in looking at Craigslist stuff. A lot of guys are older gentlemen who want to get back into it, and they're like, you know, and they put up these unwittingly... you know, these headlines that basically would put off anybody who really wanted to be in a band with them, but what, you know, whatever. They write, like, haven't played in 20 years, want to get back into it. It's like, yeah, that's my first choice for a bass player, you know. Carpal tunnel advancing daily.
That's me.
We'll be unable to play within 6 months, looking for guys to jam, you know. So, and then also the Stevie Ray Vaughan thing, those crowds that they circulate in, it sounds like this one gentleman in this persona that I'm constructing tried to play with some people before, and they were just all Stevie Ray Vaughan. So now, in his Craigslist ad, he's going to get that shit out on the table that Stevie Ray Vaughan's not what he's into. So I'm going to say that I understand this guy, and that he's a real person, and that it's true.
You are correct.
All right.
All right. We have a second guitarist is needed for a band called Barry Manilow, and it's a pop-punk band that does cover of Barry Manilow tunes.
All right, I don't understand this entity, and I'm going to say it's not true.
Yeah. All right. I figured you'd get that one.
Yeah. That had your fingerprints all over it.
Yeah, it did. All right, and
your
our last
one.
Twisted
imagination.
82-year-old drummer seeks jazz band.
Ooh. 82-year-old drummer seeks jazz band. Does he mention Gene Krupa or... anybody else as an influence?
I don't think he did. He wants to play music from the 40s through the 60s.
I'm going to say that's not true.
Yes, you're correct. Do you know why that's not true?
Because he wouldn't be... Like, a lot of... By your 80s, you're probably not out there spry and drumming most folks?
No. It's false because no drummer has ever lived to the age of 82. In 2 weeks, we will be back with episode 8, a very special sit-down with our bandmate and the Lady of the Tiger, our better fifth, the lovable, super smart, and talented Joseph Iannello.
We always save the best for last. We found Joe in the woods.
In the woods?
Yeah, well, Batavia.
Same thing. All right, please check out allwnyradio.com. They've got other great programming, including streaming web radio, of all music, blog reviews, reviews by yours truly. I'll be doing some concerts in the next few weeks. There's going to be podcasts, like Corey McKnight's Comments, mm-hmm. The Big Picture with Michael Sargent. And,
have you ever listened to that? I texted you one time about that Big Picture with Michael
Sargent. I've never listened to that one yet.
It's ostensibly a photo, like a photography podcast, but like he's usually like into hardcore right-wing politics within like 10 seconds of every episode. It's great.
I think I need to listen to that.
Yeah, it's very entertaining.
And you folks do too. And then there's also the Think So Joe podcast,
yeah.
Which is hosted by a guy, I think his name is Herb Schmeckel.
No, you always get it wrong.
It's not Herb Schmeckel.
No, it's Janet.
Oh, it's Janet. Janet Snyder?
Yeah.
Oh, of course. She hosts everything.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And by the way, we got to have him on this podcast, too, because he's a cool dude, and he knows a lot about the local scene.
I absolutely
And he turns out podcasts like a motherfucker, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's like, we post like one every 2 weeks, and then I see like 15 more, and they're all like 3 hours long.
He's got the wrestling podcast, and he's got the Think So Joe. He's always super busy.
Extremely prolific.
Yes. You can check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/thestruggleisrealpodcast. On Twitter, we are at SIRPodcastNY.
Is that what it is? It always surprises me. It never looks right whenever I see it. But it must be, isn't it?
It is. SIR Podcast is actually taken.
Yeah.
So I never know. I should have done WNY probably. Would have been smarter. But that's okay. If you want to tweet at Ryan, I am at Sir William Idol, IDOL. It's a Billy Idol reference. And Dennis will say his Twitter handle because I never pronounce it right.
Eggenbite.
Thank you, Dennis.
But you gotta, it's AG, just don't fucking look me up on Twitter, I don't care.
I like, every time I look at it, I'm like, oh, it's Agent Byte.
Yeah.
And then I notice the T's not there, and then, you know.
Yeah, I just got an account because, like, you know, everybody had accounts and stuff, and
yeah.
I very rarely tweet or anything from it.
You can check out Dumb Angel at dumbangel.bandcamp.com.
Oh, yeah, don't forget, we have Blake Cooper's interview coming up shortly here.
Yes.
And also, Mount Doom, look for that. That's something that Blake's going to talk about. That is a compilation that his singer and Dumb Angel put together of local Rochester bands. And it's supposed to be really cool. So,
all right.
He wanted to get up. He made a point of getting a plug-in for that, so we're plugging it again for him.
Sure. And if you want to be featured on the show, send us a message. We love hearing from people. We love feedback. Anything you want to tell us, you know, that you don't want to say to our faces, you can just say it to us on Facebook. And so Blake Cooper of Dumb Angel will be back with us after break.
All right, thanks for listening to The Struggle Is Real, Buffalo Music Podcast on allwnyradio.com.
Perf.
You guys don't even know what it means to be a trapper.
Yeah.
Tell them, French.
I can catch a helpless animal, skin it with my bare hands. I wake up muddy and I go to bed bloody, 'cause I'm a trapping man. I can brave the nastiest weather, even if it's 80 below. My pa was an elephant, but that's irrelevant. My ma was an Eskimo. I eat rabbit's heads for breakfast, with beaver butt on the side. My mind's magnificent, my body no different. I'm full of trapper pride. Yo-ho! Rip the fur, cut the skin with my knife. Yo-ho! One thing for sure, nothing like the trapping life. I'm better than the baddest sailor. I make love to women 10 feet tall. I've got a chest of wonder and balls of thunder. I can break right through a wall. I love the sound of metal snapping on an animal's head. Sometimes they scupper, sometimes they whimper, but they always end up dead.
I've always wanted to be somebody who didn't get pushed around. Now that I'm a trapper, I'm the meanest guy around.
Second meanest!
The blood of a fresh-caught rodent is as sweet as branded wine. And the brain of an antelope tastes like cantaloupe. What a yummy life.
Yo-ho!
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 Rip their fur, cut their eyes out with my knife.
Yo-ho!
Yo-ho!
Oh, stop. That's sick.
I agree. Letter was singing in the wrong key.
No, I wasn't. It was Lautenheiser. I was singing in E-flat minor.
The song's an F sharp major!
I think they're the same thing. I mean, E flat is the relative minor of F sharp.
No, it isn't. The relative minor is three half tones down from the major, not up!
No, it's three down, like A is the relative minor of C major.
But isn't A sharp in C major?
Wait, are you singing Mixolydian scales or something?
A sharp is tonic to C major. It's the six.
No, it isn't.
Well, it'd be like a raised 13th, if any.
All right, well, we are here with Blake Cooper from the group Dumb Angel, and you can check them out at dumbangel.bandcamp.com. Welcome, Blake.
Hey.
So we want to just spend, and I'm here with Ryan Gurnett, my trusty co-host.
Well, hi, Dennis.
Or am I your co-host this episode?
We're Dennis. We're each other's co-hosts.
We are there for one another.
Yes.
All right. So, Blake, you're in, I guess, what would you call it, like a garage pop band? Is that what
yeah,
you guys describe yourselves?
It's very loose. It's loose rock and roll type music that you can play without practicing a lot. Because, I live in Buffalo and my bandmates live in Rochester. And I've been in bands with these guys since high school, really. We've played in a few different evolutions of our band and they all kind of always tended to follow sort of whatever the trend was or whatever. We were in, like, a quirky folk band in the early 2000s, and we played in, like, harder punk-style bands in high school and stuff. But this one's sort of just more a straightforward kind of, like, galloping sort of garage rocky kind of thing that we do for fun. It's very casual, which I really like. It's probably the first band I've really been in that I've had fun with because it's so... there's not a lot of pretense or ideas that we're going to, you know, we're really working really super hard towards something. It's really just about having fun, and that's what I like about it.
What kind of influences do you have for the band? I heard, with the stuff I listened to, I heard some Flaming Lips in there. I think
sure.
I heard a little bit of Tripping Daisy. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, definitely. That's pretty right on. I'd say the general sort of influence is sort of like a 60s... that sort of like proto-grodge kind of like, you know, it's weird to describe Velvet Underground that way, but like Velvet Underground type of 60s, late 60s.
A lot of Beach Boys, I think, is going on there.
Yeah, definitely,
right?
Definitely. But that sort of through the filter of just from our age and what we grew up listening to, the sort of 90s stuff that is a little bit analog to that, like you said, Flaming Lips, sort of. We really like the, like, Elephant Six type bands, Apples and Stereo, Neutral Milk Hotel, those type of guys. So we, that's a big influence, but that's definitely the, like, sort of point in time that we definitely have that probably the heaviest influence from. So
yeah, so you play drums, you play a lot of different instruments though, right?
Yeah, I play a few different things. I kind of was raised, I took piano lessons as a kid, and then I taught myself guitar, and bass kind of followed from that. Drums was something I always wanted to play, but we never had a good setup growing up in my family for that, because we either lived in like apartment complexes where you couldn't be too loud. And my family didn't have a lot of money growing up, so it was like, you know, a cheapy guitar you could get for a couple $100, but a starter drum set's like, you know, $500 to $700 to $900. So it was just always a little unattainable, and I think that made me really like, and you know, they're just fun to play. It's primal and energetic and kind of you can get into it easy, and it seems sort of like more of a, you know, I don't have to learn any chords. I can just hit things. And there's something really empowering about that. So, all being a teenager, I was like that annoying guy who anytime a friend had a drum kit, I'll be like, let me just sit down for a second and like play bad drums and stuff.
Did you have heroes on drums that
you
emulated?
I mean, that I emulate? No, I admire drummers who can do simple drumming really compellingly well. Because that's what I'd like to aspire to. You know, I always admire really great drummers. Like, I always was really, fascinated by John Bonham or, like, some of the, like, jazz guys, like,
Krupa?
Like, on the name. Yeah, Gene Krupa. Yeah. Buddy Rich? Was Buddy Rich a drummer?
Yeah,
Buddy
yeah.
Rich. Yeah, that's the one I was thinking of. But Gene Krupa,
cool.
too. And, like, I always thought that was really cool, and I'd love to do that, but it's just never been my, especially now that, like, I'm older, and I don't even, like, own a drum kit of my own. I go to practice with them, and I play when I'm there, so I'm really a very, like, self-taught, not, you know, like, I've had people say I do weird, like, I don't switch arms the right way, and I don't, like, you know, so I don't do it according to the theory, and that's why I'm kind of fascinated when I hear almost, like, amateurish drumming, That's still nonetheless kind of compelling, even though it's straightforward and never, like, totally perfect. I think of, like, again, getting back to some of that 90s influence, like, almost like maybe Pavement is like this sometimes. Oh, okay. A little bit, where it's, like, you know, it's not always spot on, but there's something really compelling about the way it, like, lurches forward a little. It's, like, almost its own sort of, like, vibe that it develops. I kind of like that. Yeah. I sort of aspire to that, partly just because it's easy and it doesn't require a lot of my time to get into.
Apparently, it's like, I don't want to leave this recording just yet. Apparently, it took 4 years to get this this latest album. And the album is called Antenna?
Antenna, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And it was released in 2015, is that right?
That's right, yep.
Okay.
I think so. It's, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I saw on the Buffa blog, did a little write-up on it.
That's
Did a little bit of due diligence.
Yeah.
Research.
For sure. Yeah, that was the result, again, of just kind of piece by piece putting it together, you know, getting together on a weekend here or there. We also kind of go a song at a time. We don't, you know, like, write a full-length album's worth of material and then record it all, set, you know, piece by... We kind of do, like, come up with a song, commit it, you know, do some embellishments as we go along, and then just kind of wait till we have something that's big enough to release like that before we release it as a package.
Right.
And for a while, we were doing, like, singles. We'd just record one or two songs. When we'd have one or two songs, we'd put it in a little, like... slipcase with a CDR and just, like, give them out at shows
right.
or sell them for a couple bucks, depending where we were or whatever. But, you know, I think the full length was sort of just something we finally, like, realized we had enough material before after several years of doing that process.
And several EPs you'd already released.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
So you sort of cannibalized those
yes,
for it.
Yes, we did. Yeah. Right away. So, yeah. And now, you know, we're kind of doing the same thing. We've got, like, two or three
charge
songs.
Of people twice for the same product.
Yeah.
Smart.
That's on Bandcamp. I mean, I guess there is a... I guess you can pay to buy it, but...
Right.
Yeah. What was I going to say? One thing I think so interesting is that now... with the proliferation of, like, these small DIY sort of boutique labels,
mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to be, I just sort of automatically did, like, air quotes.
Nobody saw the sarcastic air quotes.
I know, and I don't mean to be sarcastic because these labels are actually great for artists because it's just a little extra mileage and they might not even have the best sense of how to, I mean, record labels almost, it doesn't matter the size of a record label, they often don't know how to sell records.
Yeah.
But, it's just this little extra mileage, and it's sort of this way to build a community. Like, a record label now, if it's a small label, and that's who we work with. We work with a small label. They really wanted to release our album on cassette, which was cool.
Is that Dad's Mustache? What are they called?
Dad's Stash. Yeah, Dad's
Stash
Records.
That's great.
But I like that because it's almost like the record label... it's a much more helpful role that the record label plays now. It's less about, like, okay, here's your advance. You can pay me back later when your record sells enough, or you can kind of live in squalor and et cetera, et cetera. You know, the TLC story, if you will. But, you know, with smaller labels, it's more like they're kind of tapped into the same communities you are, and it's more about just, you know, one more channel to help spread that word, and it's usually just, like, local people who are enthusiastic about your music.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really cool, and that's something that I've kind of been surprised at how those have proliferated and sprung up and how helpful they are in kind of building that sort of buzz that you need to...
Have you sold a lot of cassettes?
I have no idea how many cassettes we've sold, actually. I think the printing was... is like 100 or 200.
Okay.
There's probably still some cassettes left.
I see them in stores. I think I'd rather have a record player in my car than a cassette player.
Yeah. I honestly, the cassette thing is confusing to me too. I should say about, this is a way that I'm a little bit alien from the normal sort of, like, music scene type of people. And the people that I hang out with, particularly the Rochester people, is they are absolutely crazy about vinyl. They're very protective of their, like, audiophile experience, and vinyl is their chosen vehicle for that. I must just be, like, much more pragmatic or much more... I'm definitely, like, medium agnostic for the most case. Or, you know, for me, it's about convenience of listening to music. Like, I was reading an interview with... you know, the Broken Social Scene, guy Kevin Drew, he did this interview and he came off really, like, he was very defensive of, like, he's like, It was your basic sort of like, iPhones are ruining the way we relate to one another, and now when I want to listen to a record, I have to try to get the Bluetooth to connect to my car, and I just wish I could listen to a record. It's just easier to listen to a record. But my response to that is like, well, not on the subway.
Yeah.
You know, so like there's some kind of...
your desk at work.
Yeah. Not
working out.
I think there's something to be said about that, about having the access to the music. I do think, I mean, yeah, there's so many records that sound great on vinyl. Something that I've sort of come to buy into is this fact that like different music sounds better on different media, depending
on
how it was recorded or what the sort of like aesthetic is of the music. I've heard people say that like hip hop and like harder sort of electronic music sounds good on cassettes because of the cheapy sort of compression gives it a more like hard hitting, but sort of like lo-fi sounding thing, you know?
Interesting.
But as far as the media itself goes, I'm really never that attached to one style or another. All my friends, whenever we, you know, it's all about like the plan to somehow eventually get it on vinyl when you...
Yeah, you know,
absolutely.
My friend gave me an audio... Yeah, I guess. He gave me an Audio Technica, I guess it is, a turntable, about 3 years ago. It was this, you know, it was a big, big ceremony. It was my birthday,
cool.
And he's going to get me into vinyl. And I've been collecting vinyl. I used to have turntables, you know, and then the one broke. And and then for the other reason, you know, all the matters of convenience we spoke about, I'm just like, you know, I'm not going to bother. I've got my CD collection of, you know, 500 CDs, which is now just collecting dust. But anyways, so he presents me with this turntable. So, it's, you know, ready to go. I got it at a estate sale. Only problem is it's lacking a counterweight for the back, and it shouldn't be a big deal. Fast forward 3 weeks later, I'm in email conversations with dudes in Cleveland talking about fucking diameters and weights and shit, and like it needs to be this mounted this far down the tone arm, and this is a common turntable too. Yep. This isn't any like you know obscure turntable.
Right.
So I just it's still sitting out there. I'll show it to you after the interview if you like.
Cool.
It's there. It's also got a layer of dust on it. And yeah, where's the convenience in that?
Well, but for the right type of person, I guess that like what exactly kind of counterweight you use and where
that's
on the
not
needle
me.
You right it's not
how,
me either.
How many eighths of an inch the diameter has to be and the weight
right.
And
exactly that's fun for some people
right.
Depending on the mood that I'm in I can be very
well,
dismissive
I'm not an engineer
that. Yeah exactly I tell people that's I say it. Like I'm sorry I just like music what
right,
I don't
right.
know
yeah.
excuse me I don't want to have to like configure
sorry
my...
if I don't belong in this conversation about turntables
right.
I'm only a fan of music
right exactly but I mean I get it everyone kind of has their thing and you relate to it however you relate to it but
yeah,
it's
well,
never been
even, even among musicians, I'm always fascinated by dudes who are way into their gear because I am not a gearhead.
Right.
Not
me neither.
Like I've got pedals, I've got an amp, and everything goes at it doesn't all go at 5 o'clock. But damn it, if I can start there, I'm pretty happy.
Right.
You know, with the treble and stuff.
Yeah.
And but some people just well, actually, we had a gentleman in here.
I was just
Charles.
About to mention that.
Yeah, we had Charles
teasing future episode.
Pagliana in another episode, who is from the Left Hand of Darkness, who is a kind of I guess a mad scientist. Type,
oh, absolutely.
Sure.
He plays a 12-string Chapman stick, I believe is what it's called.
Wow. I've never heard
and
of this.
I've heard of Chapman stick.
I've never
don't
heard of this.
How.
I don't
it,
know
like,
how.
It's a, it has a guitar out and a bass out, and he has three different sets of pedal boards that he uses. And
I mean,
he was talking gear, and I'm sure if you're a gearhead, it was super interesting.
Yeah.
I went over my head after like 2 or 3 minutes. I'm just like,
So do you like playing live?
I find it stressful to play live, honestly.
I'm me
not...
Me too.
I'm
with you.
I actually completely agree.
I'm the kind of... I don't know. I have to be in exactly the right sort of mental zone, I feel, or else I can psych myself out one way or the other. Either, like, it's fine, it's so good, it's going to be great, and then my expectations aren't met. Or I'm a very, like, doomsday kind of, like, this is going to be a colossal failure.
Right.
And I can get inside my own head with that stuff a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add that to the fact that I'm really, as far as a drummer, I'm not that confident. I'm not that practiced. I'm very sort of, like, wild with it. And, you know, I'd like to say I can keep tempo the same every time we play a song.
Yeah, you're a drummer. You'd like to say that.
I would like to say that. Like,
every drummer would like to say that.
But I'm in that space where, like, you know, it doesn't always come out the same, and I'm not always confident. And for me, you know, it's sort of the biggest challenge for me because they... you know, they're all in Rochester. They actually live in the same house. One of the guys in the band lives downstairs in an apartment, and the other one lives up. So they can really, like, practice any time.
Right.
And I have to drive, an hour and 20 minutes or whatever just to, like, you know, get in an hour here and there or whatever. So it's tough for me to do the due diligence I would need to feel confident enough
when you get up live, yeah.
For live playing to be a real, like, easygoing.
Do you do anything when you guys track? I know you like to get in the studio and everything and do home studio recording. Do you listen to a metronome or anything, or do you guys just...
Sometimes what we do, I found what works best to kind of get in the middle between, like, too stiff and totally loose is we usually do, like, a scratch track with guitar. It's usually as simple as that. And I trust the guitar. Sometimes they'll do guitar and bass together and we'll record that direct while I play drums, and then I'll listen to them back with the scratch track and play the drums that we track. Mm. I like that because it's a little more of a sort of organic way to do it rather than just have the, like, pure click. Which, you know, I guess if you're, again, really tight and can follow without, like, kind of being jerky and always trying to get that beat, you know, that might work better. But, it reminds me of this thing. I went to school for recording, and one of our instructors was Jack Richardson, was the guy who produced, like, all the Guess Who records. Mm-hmm. I went to school in Canada, so all my music references are always Canadian bands. Like, it's always like, oh, yeah, it's like the guy that did Live Sound for Rush told me. Or it's always, yeah, like, it's always
Guess
some...
Who's, the Guess Who's ex-roadie.
I feel like it's worth saying because I'm probably going to mention other Canadian bands. I already did mention Broken Social Scene, so it's like the same thing. But anyway, and that's what he said. It really influenced me. He said the way he... would kind of dictate, he was a pretty hands-on producer, and the way that he would dictate that they get the rhythm down for their songs is he would tap a microphone. So he'd just go like,
mm-hmm.
And thinking, you know, thinking in his head, these eyes, you know, uh-huh. Like, and just do that his way, and then that's their click track, basically. And what I liked about that is it creates a sort of a more natural rhythm, a more, I don't know, human, if you will, rhythm, yeah. For lack of a better word. So I like that approach. We usually do, mm-hmm. something like that.
Oh, okay.
When you went to school for audio engineering, were you at the time, were you guys learning on, like, still, like, the old reel-to-reels, or were you, like, Pro Tools?
Well...
Now, how old are you, exactly?
Yeah. Hi, I'm 31. So, yeah. And by the time I got to school, it was Pro Tools. They had Pro Tools, okay. And Logic and stuff. But they had a reel-to-reel, too. We did learn about the principles of that and analog console recording with, you know, like, tube-powered channels and things like that. So we went through all that, but, you know, for practicality, it was at the end, it was, you know, going into a Pro Tools rig usually.
Yeah. Right, but people still like that stuff, though. I mean, they use a lot of, you know, tube compressors and everything to get old sounds,
oh, yeah.
And vintage instruments. I know it's something that some studios even specialize in.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. And despite my, like, format bashing earlier about the analog vinyl people, that's really important just to have options when you're recording, you know, mm-hmm. And that all is a little different, so I think it's great when you have a bunch of different things to try. We do that sometimes. Some of the effects, some of those noisy things you mentioned on the mm-hmm. album are effects from a reel-to-reel tape machine that we'd record something
cool.
on and speed it up or, you know, do something kind of different with it. So I like having the options, and yeah. So we did a little of everything, but yeah, this was the age of Pro Tools.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I'm 4 years older than you, and I, at the beginning, my freshman year was like all 16 or 2-inch tape.
Yep.
So, and then eventually, like, oh, look, this thing called Pro Tools. Right in the middle of college when I'm learning about how to get into an industry recording.
All
right.
Right
when
paradigm
crashed.
Shift.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's how it is. And I mean, I was going in the early... mid-2000s, which is not the greatest time for the music industry. So it was interesting, you know, talk about a paradigm shift. It was interesting because all these people were industry people who were teaching these courses, albeit the Canadian music industry. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No.
But, you know, so it was all very funny to hear their almost, like, mildly panicked self-reassurance that, like, this is still the way things are
that
done.
This whole internet thing is going to blow over.
They think music is still going to be done in recording studios mm-hmm. in 10 years, but they're not sure. They'll we'll just try to cover all our bases, and hopefully you get something meaningful out of this. And, I think a lot of the cachet came from that these were, like, industry people teaching this, which was cool, but, yeah, at the end of the day, like... You'd better be good at, like, operating a computer or else, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's kind of what it what it takes now. But, you know, they also helped me develop a sense of the procedure. Again, the sort of, like, way to do things that's sort of ordered and, you know, helps you not lose sight of the bigger picture amidst the chaos of working with bands, which...
Yeah, sort of project management.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We're going to get into your studio experience a little bit more after the break, cool. but one question I ask everybody that we lure into the studio here is... for your group, you touched on this a little bit earlier, but what would success look like for you guys?
I have to say we're probably already there just because, and again, I guess I don't know.
Because you don't sound like you're struggling. I mean, this all sounds sort of, you're having fun.
Yeah, definitely.
Not a lot of struggle.
Yeah, right. For sure. And I think, I'm wondering now whether... everyone in the band would have the same definition of success. I'm sure that's a common thing. But, you know, I know the other guys, I think, get the amount of interaction with music and playing music and being part of a scene that they need because they're all in other bands, and this is kind of their side thing. So,
right. Yeah, because success is in relationship to your expectations, I suppose,
yeah,
right?
And after this podcast airs, I'll see how many cassette tapes are left, and maybe I'll redefine success.
We'll see. We've been known to move some tape.
If the struggle is real bump.
Yeah.
You get
the
struggle is real bump and you're on your way.
We have we'll actually be releasing the podcast on cassette tape. For...
Perfect.
Yeah,
that
if you can put
us
in touch with Dad's
time
stash.
Has come.
That's great. So we're going to play one of your songs now from Dumb Angel. Can you tell us about what we're about to hear, the track that you selected? I think it was the first track.
Is it Moss?
Moss.
You selected?
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about this song.
One thing I really like about Moss is that came together really, really quickly and sort of organically. It's an example of what I think Ben, our songwriter, is good at, which is writing songs. I call it hooks on hooks on hooks, where it's like, you know, there's one chorus and then there's another part that sounds more like a chorus. And then there's another part that's like, oh, no, this was the chorus. That was all just lead up. And so this song kind of has that, but it's also just sort of like goofy. There's little instrumental sections and we did location recordings. I think we like hit lampposts.
Oh, that's
for, like,
fantastic.
Bell sounds and, you know, bicycle bells and stuff. So there's a lot of different
stuff. Gotta have a few of those in there.
Yeah. So this song's got a little bit. It's a good introduction.
All right, great. Well, this is Blake Cooper. You're listening to the Struggle is Real podcast, all about Buffalo music. And you can find this song at dumbangel.bandcamp.com.
welcome back. I'm Ryan Gurnett with my co-host, Dennis Reed Jr.
Yo.
And I'm here to tell you that the struggle is real. We have guest Blake Cooper from Dumb Angel.
Hey.
And so I've been waiting to have a guest in here, someone that I can geek out about recording studio stories. I want you to clear your mind right now and tell me, what is just the stupidest fucking thing that anyone's ever tried to do at a recording studio?
Oh, man. I should say, I mean, if you work at the right level of recording studio, it's all stupid. Really, like...
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, I interned in a recording studio in Rochester, and it was like the perfect mix of very like low-level musicians who hadn't yet discovered or had some like false ideal about being in a recording studio. Like being in a recording studio makes you a professional musician, and that's why
like they were at the BBC.
Exactly, they were like holding out for that studio session that was just gonna like blow it all wide open. And then like corporate gigs and like, you know, stuff that wasn't even music, but like, you know, we did a lot of like books on tape and stuff. Like I did all sorts of weird stuff, but the probably the worst one, the dumbest one, if you will, was like I had this guy come in. I was working in the B studio, mm-hmm. and I was in charge of the session for a guy who was like finishing up a project, and it was hip hop, but it was really like, you know, just very like, you could tell the guy maybe had like Fruity Loops and made a kind of a general like generic sort of beat, and you know, then he was bringing it in. I was gonna like mix the beat, and he was gonna do some like last vocal stuff. But I remember all he had left for this one session were the ad libs, and if you don't know in hip hop, the ad libs are sort of like what you record behind the verse, and it's sort of like, you know, often it just takes the form of like, what?
Oh yeah, 2017.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. What? Yeah. 9.5 plus four pennies. Yeah. That kind of thing. Like you, and so it
square
was...
Square root of 9 is 3.
Yeah, right. So, that's kind of all the session was for a while, which is really bizarre to be, and like, I couldn't help it. Like, I had it in headphones, and every once in a while, he was in a booth, so he couldn't really... I would turn my monitor down just to listen to him just in a room going like, can't stop, won't stop, uh-huh. And like, you know, like, it was that kind of thing. It wasn't even inventive ad-libbing, but it was like a whole session of that. That whole project was great because then we were working on mixing, and I remember it was really, you know, like every track was just basically like a kick drum, a snare drum, hi-hats, and some kind of like bassish synth, like in the low mid range to just kind of fill it. Like one thing to fill it out and then a standard drum kit. And I remember we were just going through and doing the kind of basic stuff to the kick drum and the snare, and I got to the hi-hat and I like panned the hi-hat a little bit to the left, and he's like, whoa, what was that? And I was like, oh, I just panned a little to the left. He's like, it's coming from over here now. How'd you do that? And I was like, actually, that wasn't dumb. That was awesome because it was the only time in my life I ever felt so smart. So yeah. I taught you stereo panning. Like, you didn't know stereo existed.
Wow.
Somehow. You got through your life, whatever, like 18 to 24 years or whatever.
Yeah, just never really questioning.
You never heard like a thing in one side but not the other. It blows my mind to this day. I don't know how you even, as a casual person, let alone a musician, let alone someone who found themselves in a recording studio, like... It was such an ego boost to be like, to this guy, like, you were George Martin if you could pan something to the left or right. So I felt great after that. It was totally worth the 3 hours of listening to ad-libs. So that was a bad one, for sure. What are your experiences in recording studios?
I had, it was a metal band.
Okay. Metal bands.
Something sort of acid or something. It was just two guys. It was just this dirtbag, kind of fat singer, metalhead guy who offered...
I think I know him.
He worked at a gas station. He offered to pay us in cocaine numerous times. And we're setting up the drums, and the kick is backwards. And we tell the drummer, we're like, this is the side you hit, and this is the side you put the mic at.
Yeah.
And he's like, dude, they're his drums. He points at the singer. He's like, I just play them the way he wants me to play them.
Whoa.
And... the drum, like, he was a pretty competent drummer if he was just doing, like, an easy 4-beat.
Yep.
And he kept wanting to throw all these crazy fills, and it wasn't working. And then we finally get to do the vocals, and, like I said, this guy just looks like a random metalhead. And the lyrics are just some of the. I wish I had a copy of the recording to share it. I would use their music as the theme song because they're probably all dead by now. And
probably.
And he's singing like, "You are my honey from hell," and then out of nowhere comes this voice, "You light my night," and that's not even an exaggeration.
Wow,
that is what his voice sounded like. That is what he wanted the falsetto from his metal band to be.
Sound like one of the guys from Monty Python in a wig and a dress.
Absolutely.
I did a metal ish band once that was really bad, and it's the same thing. I wish I had a recording of it because my friends ask about it because they did this thing where there was squealing involved, which I guess squealing was like next level, you know, screaming. It's like, you know, screaming wasn't enough, but to squeal like a pig was, there was a section of this song and like, you know, my friends and I shamefully would like isolate it and listen to it and laugh about it later, but there was definitely a part of the song where it was like, like that kind of thing going on with some weird like instrumental breakdown.
Like a demented Muppet.
I did that.
That's actually what I was thinking.
Yeah.
I did that recording in a basement and should have stayed there. That should stay in the basement.
There's a branch of not to harp on metal guy. We love you
I
all.
Like,
we love metal people.
Great metal. Yeah.
But there's a genre where people bark.
Mm.
Where there's like there's a band called Canine.
Okay.
Evidently.
Really?
Yeah, where it's actually a metal band and they have somebody singing who's actually, I don't know how to put this. It's a dog.
Yeah.
It is a dog.
Like a literal dog.
Like a literal four-legged canine, different whole chromosomal thing going on. Yeah.
I didn't know that, but it doesn't surprise me.
It's true.
It's like one of those things.
That sounds about right.
That makes sense. Yeah. Metal's a challenge to record, especially because those guys, I worked in a recording studio, but I also, you know, because it was about the time that I was done with school, you could just get a computer and a rig and, you know, so I did some on my own and it was always like metal bands and it was always in their basement with these ceilings that are like 7 feet high and they're like, you know, playing the loudest music ever that's just like bouncing off of everything and they're like, you'll make it work, right? And like sloppy musicianship that they're like, you'll chop that up, right?
You can fix that.
Well, yeah, so that's something about recording is everyone has unrealistic expectations about the magic, quote unquote, that happens that turns whatever you did into a like workable product that someone wants to listen to.
Yeah.
It's always a little big gap between what people think, what people think you can do and what you can do. Nights I've spent just like chopping up drum beats by beat. It's a nightmare sometimes.
Have you ever had any, have you ever had anybody in the studio who had an odd ritual for getting into their lyrics? Like any strange demands for like laying down a vocal track or a guitar track, like lights coming down or, you know, some sand in there.
I knew a guy who'd turn out like all the lights and he would need like twinkle Christmas lights in the corner. Is that the only way to perform? Like,
oh, wow.
The only thing I can think of is just people whose ritual was like desperation because when they hear themselves, they're not living up to whatever ideals in their head. And
right.
They always are like, I just need maybe a glass of water. Or I just need to take 5 minutes. And it's always like, you know, they're looking for a ritual to save them. But I don't know if I've ever worked with anyone with a really like weird demanding ritual. I will say that most of the bands I've recorded in my time are pretty like easygoing,
mm-hmm.
almost to the point of being too easygoing where they don't, like, I've worked with bands that don't care enough, definitely.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to get something out of it that's not really the equivalent of what they're putting in. I think that's most common, probably. So,
if the singing doesn't sound right, you just keep turning up the reverb.
Yep,
slowly.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, you're leaving the room up another 10%.
I once had a guy say to me, "I don't get it. It sounds so good when I'm singing along in the car to music." And it's like, it's very different. Very different when you're doing this from what that is.
I tried that in high school. Girls sang along really nice with the radio at work. You should sing in my band. Tone deaf.
Yeah.
I sat with her piano. I played a C, and I'm like, sing that note. And she couldn't hit it, and she started crying.
Well, and that's intense. Yeah. With recording, it's so easy to psych yourself out because you don't even have that anchor of people playing in the same room with you often. It's like, especially by the time you get to the vocals, it's often just someone standing in a booth listening. And, you know, so you've got to find that you're not even like feeling it the way you usually do when your band's there and there's no visual cues. You're just supposed to kind of be locked in. you know, that's an art unto itself. So
yeah, I find that when I'm singing in the studio, because we've recorded, well, in my previous bands, I've recorded probably 4 or 5 albums worth of material.
Right.
And I find I do need to almost feel like I'm performing with a band. Like,
yeah.
Like a lot of times I'll raise my arms up and make a gesture as if I'm playing the guitar and sort of like dance a little bit with it, just to sort of feel connected to that. You know, that gallop and that flow that you get with a group.
I think that's the thing people get surprised by most often with recording, is what a sort of alienating process it is compared to the process of playing music with your, you know, like, and if you want to, I mean, it's one thing, some people want to make that process the recording process, and let's just, like, do something live and record it that way, but you need to be really skilled to do that, too, because it's all got to be in one take, and...
Thank you. I've been trying to explain that to musicians for my entire life.
Right. It's not easier to do it that way. It's just different, and it all takes skill. It's all a different thing. Making a record is very different from performing, and you do. You almost have to make it your own thing, make it what is comfortable to you.
I think Ryan was looking at me meaningfully.
Right. I noticed that glance.
Was there a meeting? I thought, yeah. Oh, okay.
Hmm.
Well,
we had some band discussion a few weeks ago how we should all try and do something live, and I'm like, no. Nope, absolutely not. I'm
try and do something live? What do you mean?
I think maybe Joe and Rick were talking about, like, recording in the barn, doing it all with one take, because the energy is going to sound better.
Oh.
And every time I've tried to do it live, it's either been an issue with people, like a drummer not being able to do a click track with a whole band, all of a sudden one guy doesn't know how to play one of his leads that he's been playing for the last year.
Yeah, you really multiply your risks
for
whatever small, you know, payoff you might get in inspiration
On the musician side
or gelling, you know what I mean.
Right. Yeah. And also on the technical side, because it's a lot of technical requirements to mic up and track a whole band and get it just, you know, that's when you're into, like, the crazy, like, and that's tough to manage the bands too, because then you've got to, like, move around microphones and they're all getting tired and they all just want to play and the vibe is gone, but you've got to, you know, plod on and all that. But
everyone needs their own monitor mix too.
Yep.
Like that gets to be a killer.
And then you set up all that up and you go to hit record and there's one track that's just dead silent. So you just stop it and trace the switch out the cable. Yeah. It's always, and then eventually someone's like, oh, maybe it's fine because it's just the second Tom. No one cares. But like, you know, compromising happens quickly when you're in that setting because everyone just wants to get something done. And then, you know, you're already sort of grading the final product anyway. It's a challenge. Recording is always a challenge. Best to just focus on one thing at a time, like the guy who just did the ad libs.
Yeah. What? You mentioned that your singer Ben.
Yep.
Correct. So he's kind of, he's the mad scientist.
Yep.
What's like the weirdest thing he's brought to you?
In terms of recordings, he does interesting stuff. Again, he's a vinyl guy. He's into vinyl, and he collects. He does, like, crate digging stuff. He finds weird, like, sound effects records and things. And there's always, and that's getting kind of back to what you were saying, Dennis, about some of the weird kind of throwaway noises on the album, because there's a lot of things where he just finds things like, oh God, it's the audio from, like, an Apollo launch in the early 70s or something. We've got to put it on this song. And, you know, well, then I'm like, well, which section? What does that mean? What's the significance? He's like, nah, that'll be great. Maybe we'll play it backwards. It'll be great. Like, you know, so he comes with a lot of stuff like that. And I've heard, you know, he's done like little sound bridges and collages of things of like wild sound he just gets with a recorder when he goes out in a park or something and puts together like collages and stuff. Recording wise, that's probably it as far as like the strangest thing. I should say he's pretty low maintenance when it comes to the actual recording process. For being the mad scientist, he's someone who's pretty comfortable just like going for it, which I admire, because not everyone has both of those qualities of the like mind going everywhere at once, but also pretty like focused and being
rare.
Able to stay in the moment when it's necessary. So
is there anything interesting he brings to his live performances? Any sort of rig or amp? Or
he's got a setup. They like gear probably the average amount. Like we were saying earlier, it's something that I kind of could take or leave, but they do cool stuff, and he's been experimenting with some delayed, like, he has some kind of loop thing that he can do that produces noise, and I'm betraying my ignorance about the subject now as I'm speaking, because I don't know how it works. I think it's just, I think it's just some kind of like overdrive with a delay effect that he mm-hmm. attunes to try to kind of. We do some stuff where we go into songs. We've been playing that Wire song, Strange. Do you know that song? R.E.M. covered it on Document. That's how I first heard of it. But Wire,
I must have heard it.
Yeah, I'm sure you've heard it. And I didn't really know.
Who knows what Michael Stipe's mumbling
exactly,
about.
Exactly. But that's a song we cover when we play live, and we've been doing a sort of like an intro that's kind of like noisy, where he builds up sort of layers of things with the delay, and like, you know, you like brings it back, so it's just kind of a like weird gurgle, and then slowly adds another sound and brings it back up, so the gurgle gets, you know, it mutates a little bit, and that's kind of fun. I think that's sort of interesting. Like I said, I don't really know how he does it, but I think it's interesting anyway.
Neat.
Yeah.
Well, Blake Cooper.
Yeah.
Of Rochester, New York.
This was fun.
You've done it all.
Yeah.
You've been in a shoegaze band.
Yeah.
You've been in a garage pop
all over.
Band.
I know,
you've
all
been
over the place.
In. Well, an acoustic sort of outfit, right? Like a folkies.
Yeah, we did
folkies.
Something like that.
Yeah, well, really appreciate you coming by here.
I have one more question.
Yes, Ryan.
Go for it.
Say you're a new band, you're getting in the studio for the first time.
Yeah.
What advice do you have?
Yeah. remain calm. Yeah, really. I mean, it's important.
Identify the exits.
Yeah, right. you know, take a magic marker and write your initials on all your gear. No, I mean, it's really, really important to come in with the confidence of knowing you can do something good, that you can make a good product. If you think you're at all going to be bewildered by the process, or that you're not prepared in terms of rehearsal and the performance, you really got to get those down first. Probably some of the best advice I ever got that helped me to really begin to understand what the process of recording or really capturing anything or creatively is that you always start with the source. You know, you get the best quality source sound you can, whether that's the equipment, the sound of the room, the performance itself. Focus on that first, and then you know, focus on the next thing in the chain, where, you know, the microphones are secondary to the performance, and the, you know, console secondary to the microphones, and your recording software is secondary to that. You always start with the core of the thing you're trying to do and build out for the best product, because you can fix some of the later stage things, but you can, you know, rarely fix a bad performance or a bad capture.
Translation, change your strings. Kids.
Yes.
Oh,
change your strings.
That's it. New drum
but
heads.
But not that morning.
And
not that morning.
Tune them up. Yeah.
18 hours, two performances.
Mm.
That's what I like to say.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Just enough to work them in, get a little. Yep. Well, I use a Bigsby, the Gretsch with the floating tremolo and stuff, so I need to get a couple plays in.
Yeah.
So.
That's good. That's great advice.
Great. Well, thanks again, Blake.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
December 2016, Buffalo, New York. This burning missive hits Craigslist. I like how this BS person who won't post who he or she is considers themselves an expert on a dysfunctional band in this pile of shit music scene around here. Did it ever occur to you that maybe said person didn't fit in the band, or maybe said person had bad habits? Doesn't mean the band is dysfunctional, it means the person is. And when it comes to that, period. The only people who get forgiveness from your rotten soul is your stupid-ass Buffalo Bills. You are most likely a talentless person who talks a lot of shit, but doesn't own a stick of gear, never shows up for practice, sits back to toke of their joint, sips a beer and says, "Back in the day, I used to." From my experience, I've played up and down the East Coast, been in lots of bands, some good, some crappy, done guest spots, done sound productions, stage productions, studio productions. There are always jackasses like you who whisper to the people in the clique. Don't listen to him or her, because they don't know what they're talking about. The truth is, if someone plays better, does something better, reads the manual, or is more talented than your dope-smoking alcoholic buddy, you criticize the hell out of them and make it hard for them. Believe me when I say this for everyone, you are the missing stare and fuck off jerkface. Go pawn in your Epiphone Les Paul, Fender Squire, start along with your Gorilla Tube amp, buy yourself a bag of weed, and never post or try to play music again. LMAO.